Ishvaranishu. Tiryan Manushya Vibhudhadishu Jivayonishu. Atme Chayatma Krita Setu Paripshayayaha. Atme Chayatma Krita Setu Paripshayayaha. Reme Nirasta Vishayopi Avaruddha Dehas. Tiryak, animals lower than human beings. Manushya, human beings, etc. Vibhudha Adishu, amongst the demigods. Jiva Yonishu, in different species of life. Atma, self. Ichchaya, by the will. Atmakrita, self created. Setu, obligations. Paripsaya, desiring to preserve. Yaha, who. Reme, performing transcendental pastimes. Nirasta, not being affected. Vishayaha, material contamination. Api, certainly. Avaruddha, manifested. Deha, transcendental body. Tasmai, unto him. Namaha, my obeisances. Bhagavate, unto the personality of Godhead. Purushottamaya, the primeval Lord. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation: O my Lord, by your own will, you appear in the various species of living entities, among animals lower than human beings, as well as among the demigods, to perform your transcendental pastimes. You are not affected by material contamination. You come just to fulfill the obligations of your own principles of religion. And therefore, O Supreme Personality, I offer my obeisances unto you for manifesting such different forms. Purport: the Lord's incarnations in different species of life are all transcendental. He appears as a human being in his incarnations of Rama, Krishna, etc. But he is not a human being. Anyone who mistakes him for an ordinary human being is certainly not very intelligent. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.11, Avajananti Mam Mura Manusham Nattanum Ashritam. The same principle is applicable when he appears as the hog or fish incarnations. They are transcendental forms of the Lord and are manifested under certain necessities of his own pleasure and pastimes. Such manifestations of the transcendental forms of the Lord are accepted by him mostly to enliven his devotees. All his incarnations are manifested whenever there is a need to deliver his devotees and maintain his own principles. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Svapadantikam Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yat Kripatamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinatarinam Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripasindubhyayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So in this chapter we are hearing about Brahma's prayers for creative energy. Like Pathura Manoharan Prabhu so nicely recapped yesterday, Brahma has just had darshan of the Lord. He was born on the lotus flower which came out of Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. And then he was trying to find his source. So he used mechanical means, which many people are trying even in Kali Yuga, using different types of rockets and spaceships to reach other planets. So In a similar way, it has all originated from Brahma. He also tried to use mechanical means first to try find out the source of his creation. So he actually went down the entire lotus stem. But obviously, it's mentioned in the scriptures that by mechanical means, we cannot achieve the Lord. You cannot achieve, even, you know, go to the higher planets by mechanical means. So Brahma tried in vain, and then he came back and sat down in the lotus flower. And then he meditated for many, many years, like thousands of his years he meditated. And then he had darshan of the Lord. So only through meditation or only through following the process of bhakti can you get darshan of the Lord. So he actually had darshan of the Lord. And then there are some verses which describe the beauty of the Lord, beauty of Ananta, the Ananta Sesh, the beauty of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. Very nicely it has been described, how beautiful the Lord is. Even though he is lying on an ocean, Garbhodaka ocean, and it seems it is at the bottom of the universe, where actually it's considered to be an abominable place. Even when the earth planet was plunged into Garbhodaka ocean, the Lord actually appeared as a boar. And there it is mentioned that a boar is very good in fishing out things from abominable places. So actually that is considered to be an abominable place where Lord Varaha went down and he brought the earth planet back into its orbit. But still, the Lord is transcendental. He is so beautiful even though he is sleeping on the Garbhodaka ocean. So that whole description is there of how Brahma got darshan of the Lord. And then Brahma starts offering prayers, which is the natural process. Like any in the Bhagavatam, we read many devotees who have darshan of the Lord. We have Prahlad Maharaj, we have Dhruv Maharaj. So whenever we have darshan of the Lord, the natural proclivity or the natural etiquette is actually you offer some prayers to the Lord. You don't just come and, you know, sit in front of the Lord. Or sometimes we see devotees, many new people who come to the temple, they are, you know, doing something like this, or they are giving flying kisses to the Lord. But actually we are supposed to offer prayers to the Lord, glorifying the Lord's position. And also, you know, telling about our position, how we are so conditioned, how we are so fallen, and begging for the Lord's mercy. And that is the exact process which Brahma is following over here. He has taken darshan of the Lord, and now he is offering prayers to the Lord. So as part of those prayers, we are reading this verse today, in which Lord Brahma is glorifying the Lord's aspect of transcendence. And he is saying that, my Lord, although you take so many incarnations, and Prabhupada is explaining in the purport that Krishna takes incarnations in the human form of life, like Krishna and Rama, or in the demigods, or he also takes incarnations in the lower species of life, like we know Varahadeva, which I already mentioned, or as a fish. So these incarnations are being mentioned by Srila Prabhupada in this purport. And Prabhupada is saying that even though he appears in the lower species of life, now when we see hogs or when we see fish or when we see a tortoise, for example, we consider actually that to be a lower birth. But the Lord has taken an incarnation as a lower birth, but still he is not affected by the lower birth, or he is not affected by the mode of ignorance in which these lower species are completely enshrouded. And the same purport, similar type of purport or similar type of explanation, Srila Prabhupada gives at the end of the 8th canto. Last year we were studying our 8th canto in the Bhaktivedanta course under Keshav Prabhu. And the last chapter of the 8th canto is about Matsya Avatar. And there Srila Prabhupada gives very big, long descriptions in the purports that even though the Lord appeared as Matsya Avatar, so there he had appeared as Matsya Avatar to save Satyavatra Muni, and the whole universe was going to be inundated and the Vedas were lost. So that's how Matsya Avatar appeared. So there is always a reason why the Lord even takes such an abominable form. There is always a reason behind it. And the reason is always either to preserve the principles of religion or to save some of his devotees. So in this case, he was trying to save Satyavrata Muni. And there he appeared as a fish. And Prabhupada tells even in that purport, where he is describing the Lord's incarnation as a fish, he is saying that even though it appears abominable, now, actually, if you see the birth of a fish, like aquatics are considered to be quite low in the evolution scale, if you see. You know, they are not even above water, they are in the water. And that birth is not considered to be very good. In fact, Keshav Prabhu was mentioning to us in the class, because fish are not able to hear even the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. They don't get an opportunity. We see many times, you know, when, you know, exalted devotees' prayers we read, even Bhakti Vinod Thakur or any of their prayers, they pray even for the birth, that give me birth as a dog or something, but give me birth in a Vaishnava's family, where I will have chance to hear the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. But if we look at the birth of a fish or aquatics, They are under the water, they are submerged. So they don't even get an opportunity to hear the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. They have to naturally wait for the evolution. Or, you know, like we have fish in our fish pond here. If they eat prasadam, we see many times children throwing prasadam to the fish. So that is one way they can get delivered. But there is no opportunity for them to hear because they are submerged inside water. So it is considered to be a very, very abominable birth, very low birth. The birth of a fish or a birth of an aquatic. But still Prabhupada explains that Krishna's position does not get affected by such a birth. He still remains transcendental. So one should not make the mistake of thinking that, oh, how, what is this that he's taking birth as a fish or a hog? And how is it that it looks like the Lord was overcome by the mode of ignorance and that is why he was forced to take such a birth? No, that is not the truth. Even if he's taking such a birth, there's a purpose. And he has taken that birth by his own will, Atma Mayaya. And people who don't realize this and who don't understand this, Prabhupada says they are described in Bhagavad Gita as Muda. Avajananti Mam Muda. They are actually, their intelligence is stolen and therefore they are not able to realize this transcendental position of the Lord. So Prabhupada says over here that he appears as a human being also. So he does take birth in the lower species, but he also takes birth as a human species, as he came in the form of Krishna, Ram, Balaram. So these forms also he came in. But here also we should not make a mistake. Now if we see in Kali Yuga especially, there are twofold problems which come up when the Lord comes as Krishna, Ram or Balaram. First is either, you know, people who are mudas or who don't understand, who haven't read the scriptures, they either think that the Lord is an ordinary human being. When he takes birth in the, they only feel like, you know, at the best they feel, oh, he's a superhuman because he could do some superhuman pastimes. But not many people accept them as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is one mistake which people do, that the Lord is appearing as a human and people take them as a human, as an ordinary human being. Or the second mistake which people do in Kali Yuga, and which has been mentioned in the 12th canto, where all the anomalies of Kali Yuga are described in detail. And in fact, it was Yudhishthir Maharaj who was the first one to notice when Kali Yuga was coming in. Because the Pandavas were ruling when the Kurukshetra war was over, and then Lord Krishna left the planet. And it is described that when Lord Krishna left the planet, he took everything with him. Krishna Swadhama Upagate. So he took everything with him. Jnana, Dharma, religion, everything he took with him. And that is when Kali Yuga started, as soon as Krishna left the planet. So Yudhishthir Maharaj was still ruling the kingdom after Krishna had left the planet. But he started noticing the symptoms of Kali Yuga. And he was discussing with Arjuna. Brothers and brothers were fighting. There was not much cooperation between people. So he started noticing all these anomalies which have been described in the 12th canto. And one of the great anomalies of Kali Yuga which has been described in the 12th canto is that people will accept normal, bogus human beings to be actually God. And it is mentioned that there will be lots of bogus people, normal human beings who will come forward and claim themselves to be God. And there will be people who will accept them. They will put them on a pedestal and they will worship them as God. And this is actually a feature of Kali Yuga. And therefore we see in Kali Yuga there are so many bogus incarnations who are coming up. If you go to India, there will be so many ashrams or so many people claiming themselves to be an incarnation of God. In fact, there are so many in south, on the south side of India, who are claiming themselves to be Kalki Avatar. And I had mentioned once in my earlier class also, because there were so many Kalki Avatars, there was actually a TV show which someone organized. And they invited all these Kalki avatars to actually speak on the show. They said, but they did not inform that they are inviting the other Kalkis also. So every Kalki thought he is only being invited to speak in this TV show. And then they all gathered and they realized so many are there over here claiming themselves to be Kalki. And the presenter said, now each of you decide amongst themselves who is Kalki avatar. Because all of you are claiming. And you can imagine what pandemonium broke up in that TV show. Everyone started literally fighting. That no, I'm Kalki Avatar. There was absolute fight and chaos inside that TV show. But, you know, it's humorous, but it actually exposes this fact and it reiterates the fact which Bhagavatam is saying, that there'll be so many bogus people who will come forward to claim themselves as incarnations. They will reject Krishna and Balaram as saying that, oh, they were just ordinary humans, they just had some superhuman power, but they will accept these conditioned human beings to be God. This is a feature of Kali Yuga. This is how Muda, or this is how unintelligent people are in Kali Yuga. So we see that people claim themselves like this to be Kalki. In fact, there was one life insurance agent. He was actually a life insurance agent for some time in his life. And then suddenly he started claiming himself to be Kalki. And he had a very fat wife. And he started saying that this is my wife, Kalki's wife. I think name has been predicted as Padmavati. So this is Padmavati. And one devotee was lecturing and he was saying that how can the God be, even that Kalki avatar himself was fat and wife also fat. So he was saying that how can God be like this? So fat and ugly. So this is how people are. They know what their looks are. They know what their capabilities are. But still, they are claiming themselves to be God. So in fact, in this connection, there is very nice pastime, which is mentioned in Prabhupada's, devotees speaking about Prabhupada. So we know there was an early disciple of Prabhupada called Govinda Dasi. And all these early disciples used to really, they were really fired up because Prabhupada was still in the planet and Prabhupada was inspiring all of them to achieve feats in Krishna consciousness which were not possible without Prabhupada's power, inspiration and empowerment. So Govinda Dasi was one day distributing books out in the street and she had actually set up a small platform sort of a thing, a podium where she was standing on top of it and she was distributing books. And a small crowd of people had gathered, curious people had gathered to see what book she is distributing and all. And in that crowd, there was one person, one lady who had come. And we all know about Ramakrishna Paramahams. So this lady was a follower of Ramakrishna Paramahams. And Ramakrishna Paramahams is actually a person who claims himself to be God. And Prabhupada has written lots and lots of articles about this person. So this lady had read lots of books and she was sort of accepting Ramakrishna Paramahams as her guru. And she approaches the Govinda Dasi and she asks, do you have any books by this Ramakrishna Paramahams? And Govinda Dasi said, no, we have this. She showed whatever books she had, like she showed Bhagavad Gita, they had Ishopanishad. So she showed the books they had. And she said that, see, this is Krishna and we are distributing books about Krishna. Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So all these things Govinda Dasi was explaining. And at that time, this lady who was a follower of this Ramakrishna Paramahams, she claimed, she said that, do you know that my guru claims himself to be an incarnation of God? And at that time, Govinda Dasi, because they had all been inspired and trained by Prabhupada, so she immediately challenged her. She said that which scriptures are mentioning that your guru has been mentioned as God? And also, how can God be so ugly? I have seen pictures of this Ramakrishna Paramahams. I know how he looks. He is not even close to being called as handsome. So how can he claim himself to be God? So are you believing in an ugly God? That is how Govinda Dasi challenged this lady, this follower of Ramakrishna Paramahams. And at that time, this lady got a bit offended. And she said that, why are you not emanating love? So because, Prabhupada's style was always heavy and cutting whenever such people would come across. So the disciples also were adopting Prabhupada's styles. And Govinda Dasi was quite cutting in her explanation that no, Ramakrishna Paramahams is not God because he's so ugly and there's no scriptural evidence for that. So this lady got a bit perturbed and she's asking, why are you not emanating love? And then Govinda Dasi said, she said that this guru who's a rascal, who's trying to kill you, and here I am trying to save you from that guru and you feel he's emanating love and I'm not emanating love when I'm trying to save you. And then, that lady just went away from there and all the devotees returned back and they reported this to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was in ecstasy when he heard about this. He was so happy that Govinda Dasi actually, smashed someone and tried to open their eyes to the reality, to the truth. So he said he was praising and praising and praising. And he said that this entire episode should be published in the Back to Godhead magazine. And it should be mentioned there, heroine Govinda Dasi. Like that, the title of the article should be like that. So Prabhupada was so pleased when someone used to expose these bogus incarnations or when someone used to expose the truth. And how, on what basis should an incarnation be accepted? So it is very important, as devotees, as preachers, it is very important. And as followers of Srila Prabhupada, it is very important to tell people the truth about these bogus incarnations. If we come across people who are, actually, most of the people are actually innocent, if you see. They are all being misled by, these flowery words of the books which these people have written. So they are all innocent and therefore it is the duty of Krishna conscious people or devotees in the Krishna consciousness movement to actually open their eyes about truth. So we should not beat around the bush when we come across these people. And truth should always be spoken. So it is said that a sadhu means he is cutting and he always speaks the truth. So obviously we don't, you know, encourage that we speak the truth bluntly and all that. But we all tell the truth in a palatable way, but we tell the truth. We open people's eyes to the reality about incarnations. In fact, there was one devotee who was there in our movement, and he had been coming for some time. He was a new person and he started coming. And he was actually a Sai Baba follower. Now that is another, you know, big threat which is there in India, where, you know, people claim Sai Baba to be an incarnation of God, especially the Satya Sai Baba with the curly hair. So he was a follower of Sai Baba, but he started coming. Somehow he got an association of devotees and he started coming. And he started chanting rounds, and slowly he came to 16 rounds. And he started following the four regulators nicely, regulative principles nicely. So very nicely this boy was coming up. And then when he had come to that standard of chanting 16 rounds of following the four regulative principles, he went and told the devotee who was trying to bring him and who was trying to cultivate him. He went and told this devotee that, thank you so much for helping me for so time. Now, you know, with your blessings, I'm going to go and join as a full-time preacher in the Sai Baba mission. And this devotee was shocked that, you know, I have, you know, we have taken so much efforts. You have come up to this stage, but what happened? Why are you going there? And then this devotee realized that actually he had never taken the, he had never told this new upcoming devotee that Sai Baba, the truth about Sai Baba, that how he is not the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and how Krishna is, and how scriptural evidences should be used, how you should not accept such people who are claiming themselves to be God. What is the process you should follow? That Guru, Sadhu, Shastra have the three checkpoints to understand if someone is God or no. So this devotee, because, you know, sometimes we are scared, okay, the person is coming up nicely, chanting will take care, it will remove all the anarthas from the heart. So sometimes some devotees are very hesitant to tell the truth or to shake people out of their complacency or out of these beliefs that they have. So sometimes devotees do that mistake because they are a bit soft and they are scared to tell that, what if he goes away? Better I allow him to be mature, maybe chanting will take care, maybe he will come around. But no. If in the initial stages we tell, for example, this devotee was told, then at least he would have, you know, continued chanting with the realization that what I'm chanting is for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And this devotee then said, when he announced to him that I'm leaving, he said, hold on, I'll explain the truth to you about Sai Baba and all. But then that devotee said, now it's too late, the upcoming person. He said, now it's too late, I've made up my mind. I've already told them I'm joining you all as a full-time preacher. So then it was too late and the devotee was lost. So we should not beat around the bush, and it is very important to tell people the truth. For example, if a person has cancer, and let's say the doctors have told the relatives that, you know, he is going to die in 6 months, let's say. So if the relatives keep hiding the fact from the patient that he is going to die in 6 months, then actually they are not doing good for that patient. They might be thinking it's okay, we'll not tell, otherwise we don't know how he'll be able to accept that he's going to be no more after 6 months. But I was listening to a lecture, and there also the person was telling that it is important you tell if people have something, some disease, some life-terminating disease like this. Because if you have declared to the person, then at least he will have an opportunity to utilize the remaining time, 6 months or 1 year, whatever that person has, in pursuit of God consciousness. At least he will have an opportunity to reform. For example, let's say he had some bad habits. But, you know, when you're about to leave the world, everybody goes in that reformation mood if they come to know that, oh, I have just this much time to leave. Now I should not waste my time. Let's say he was addicted to watching movies. Or let's say he was addicted to something else. Then he could have slowly cut that down and he could have turned his life more towards God consciousness. So actually it's a big help we can do to people. By declaring to them, obviously it has to be done in a nice way, in a proper process we follow, but it is good to tell. In the same way as Parikshit Maharaj was told. Now if Parikshit Maharaj was not told, and the fact was shielded to him, that the Brahmin boy has cursed him to die in 7 days, would the Bhagavatam have been spoken? Because Parikshit Maharaj, it was declared to him that, you know, he is going to die. In fact, the Brahmin boy's father only, Shamika Rishi, only went and declared to Parikshit Maharaj. So because it was declared to him, he had the opportunity to become renounced, to become detached, to leave his kingdom and actually go to the banks of the Jamuna. And then all the sages assembled, and then he had the opportunity to inquire that, okay, what is the duty of a dying man? Please tell me. and then the entire Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. So therefore it is very important that don't beat around the bush and tell the truth about all these bogus incarnations who actually either reject Rama and Krishna, Lord Rama and Krishna, as ordinary human beings, like Prabhupada says in these purports, or they actually accept some bogus people as Rama and Krishna. In fact, Satswarup Maharaj once wrote a long letter to Shriya Prabhupada. He also came to know about Ramakrishna Paramahams, and he asked Prabhupada, that Prabhupada, you know, we are hearing so much about Ramakrishna Paramahams. Is he actually an incarnation of God? This was in the early days when the movement was still being established. And Prabhupada knew the menace and the threat which was there, because Prabhupada is from Calcutta. So Prabhupada knew the threat that was there of, you know, this person who's claiming himself to be God and how much his mission was spreading in India. So Prabhupada immediately wanted to address this issue. So Prabhupada took the time to write a long letter explaining to Satswarupa Maharaj. So he first gave the background. He said that actually this Ramakrishna Paramahams, if you observe his life and whatever philosophy, he's actually a worshipper of goddess Kali. And then Prabhupada referred to the Bhagavad Gita. And Prabhupada said that if you see in the Bhagavad Gita, it is so clearly mentioned, worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, if this Ramakrishna Paramahamsa is worshipping goddess Kali, who is Mother Nature or goddess Durga, and in a form of goddess Durga. Now, what is the duty of Durga? The duty of Durga, she is carrying a trident. And the meaning of the trident is to actually give tapatreya. Tapatreya means to keep give people the threefold miseries of material life. That is actually the purpose or the work or the duty which goddess Durga has been given by Krishna. So she uses that trident continuously to give people the tapatriya or the threefold miseries of material world. And her duty is to actually keep using her trident unqualified people from going out of the material world and back to the spiritual world. That is the duty of goddess Durga. To actually keep people somehow or the other enclosed in that Durg. That is why she is called as Durga. Because Durg means material world is called as a fort or Durg. And she is the protector of the fort, and therefore she is called Durga. So her duty is not to allow people to escape from that Durga or that fort, to somehow or the other keep them inside. And what is Krishna's role? Krishna's role, people who worship Krishna, Krishna is actually trying to take his devotees out of the material world. That is Krishna's this thing. So devotees of Krishna are actually aiming for that. By worshipping Krishna, they are aiming to go out, to be released from these threefold miseries of material life. But a person who is voluntarily worshipping goddess Durga, that means he is actually a fool. He is not intelligent. Because goddess Durga, what will she give? She will ultimately keep that person inside the material world. He is not going to be able to go out. So Prabhupada explained all this in the letter to Satswarup Maharaj. And he said, then what is he considered to be intelligent? Then how can he claim himself to be God? And he actually prays to goddess Durga that, oh, I should become an incarnation of God. These are the type of prayers also which are offered by Ramakrishna Paramahams. So actually it is said that he is not very intelligent, first of all, Prabhupada explained. And then Prabhupada also explained about his background. So Prabhupada said that this Ramakrishna Paramahams was actually born as Gadadhar Chatterjee. That was his birth name. So he was a Bengali. I think he was born in Calcutta. And he was born as Gadadhar Chatterjee. But at some point in time, he started declaring himself to be an incarnation of Lord Ram. He started telling that, oh, I am the one who is the son of Dashrath Maharaj and I have come back. I am Lord Ram and I have come back as an incarnation of Lord Ram. That is how he started claiming himself to be Lord Ram, and he started getting that name. And he had a famous disciple, which also most of us have heard about, who was Vivekananda. And Vivekananda not only accepted him to be an incarnation of Ram, he also accepted him to be an incarnation of Krishna. And that is how this Gadadhar Chatterjee got the name of Ramakrishna Paramahams. This is what Prabhupada was explaining in the letter to Satswarup Maharaj. And then Prabhupada also explained. Prabhupada said that, but there is no scriptural credentials to this acceptance of Vivekananda. Ramakrishna, this Gadadhar Chatterjee is claiming himself to be an incarnation of Ram, and Vivekananda is accepting him as to be as such. But he said there is absolutely no scriptural evidence where it is mentioned that such an incarnation of Lord Ram is going to come in Kali Yuga. And Prabhupada then also reiterated the fact that whenever we accept someone as God, we actually know every detail about that person or about that incarnation through the scriptures. We know the name of the incarnation. We know the name of the parents of that incarnation. It is already given in the scriptures. We also know where that incarnation will be born. Like, we know his address, Prabhupada says. So he says that we know the details of every detail of that incarnation through scriptures. And that is why we accept that incarnation as God. But here if we see, there is no mention, first of all, in the scriptures about Ramakrishna coming, you know, in Kali Yuga as an incarnation. There is no credential which has been mentioned, whatever his parents' name was, their names are not mentioned. Neither is his place of birth mentioned in the scriptures. So on what basis is this Vivekananda accepting him as God? And then Prabhupada went on to say that Prabhupada said that, for example, if someone comes and claims that, oh, I am President Obama, and then the other person is saying, yes, 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 you are President Obama, I really salute you. So Prabhupada said, this person claimed he is President of United States, and the other person accepted, yes, you are the President of United States. Does that make it as the truth? No, they both are foolish. They both are unintelligent. That is how Srila Prabhupada explained. In fact, in Prabhupada's own life, there was one boy who actually came to Srila Prabhupada. And this boy had actually read lots of books of Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, and he was actually quite influenced by his philosophy. And he was convinced that he is God. He is an incarnation of God. So he came to, thankfully Srila Prabhupada was present at that time when this boy was reading all these books. He was like an upcoming devotee. So he came and asked Srila Prabhupada. He came and told that he is reading the books of this incarnation and he is really influenced. And Prabhupada, I accept that he is God. So then Prabhupada told this boy, Prabhupada said that, do you accept that I am the President of America? Today I am claiming I am the President of America. So then the boy started laughing. And the boy said, no Prabhupada, how can you be the President of America? You are Srila Prabhupada. So then Prabhupada said that if you are not ready to accept me as the President of America, because you know that is not the truth, then how are you accepting this bogus person as an incarnation of God? Actually, the President of America is nothing. He is very small as compared to this, to Lord Ram or Lord Krishna. He is not even like a mosquito. So you are not ready to accept me even as a mosquito, who is, you know, like the so small representation of the President of America. How are you accepting this person as God, who is the greatest in the world? So Prabhupada used to be very heavy, and Prabhupada used to be very clear in revealing the truth, in actually telling people about the reality of these bogus incarnations. And he was very good in educating people that about how you should accept an incarnation and on what basis you should reject people who are actually claiming themselves to be incarnations. And he was again reiterating to Satswarup Maharaj in the letter that this is the prayers which some of these people do, actually. Like Ramakrishna Paramahamsa was worshipping Goddess Kali and he's praying that, oh, I should be born as an incarnation of God. He said that, no, these are not the prayers we do. In fact, there is a very nice pastime which I came across. And this pastime had taken place in the house of Kuvera. So Kuvera had a big garden. Obviously, you know, it will not be a garden, a small garden like some of the houses in Kali Yuga have. It was a huge garden with lots of ponds, lots of lakes, lots of trees, lots of fountains and all that. And in Kuvera's garden, there was a Mali or a gardener, and his name was Hema Mali. And this Hema Mali was actually a very good gardener. So he used to really look nicely after Kuvera's garden. And every day he used to pluck 300 lotus flowers from Kuvera's garden. So you can imagine the size of the garden if every day 300 lotus flowers were available. So every day he would pluck 300 lotus flowers. And he was actually an ardent worshipper of Lord Shiva, this Hema Mali. So every day he used to pluck these flowers and he used to go and offer them to Lord Shiva in the temple. And you know what was the prayer? The prayer was that, O Lord Shiva, you please give me your darshan. That was the prayer he used to do every day. So once Lord Shiva got very pleased, you know, after many, in fact it's mentioned for 5,000 years he worshipped like this, offering flowers. That was his worship. He was a Mali, a gardener. He used to pluck 500 or 300 lotus flowers and he used to go and offer them to Lord Shiva. And in this way for 5,000 years he worshipped Lord Shiva. And at the end of the 5,000 years, Lord Shiva appeared to him and gave him darshan. And Lord Shiva said that, I'm so pleased with you. You please ask me for any boon that you want and I will grant it. And actually this pastime reiterates what is the boon we should ask or what is the prayer we should do to the Lord. So this Hema Mali asked Lord Shiva. He said that, please give me the boon that one day Lord Krishna comes to my house. This is the boon actually Hema Mali asked from Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva said, Tathastu. And then Lord Shiva disappeared from there. And Hema Mali in due course of time left his body. And in the next lifetime, this same Hema Mali was actually born as Sudama in Mathura. So this Hema Mali is actually the flower garland, you know, the Sudama Mali who actually was making garlands. And actually when Lord Krishna and Balaram came to Mathura, they went to the house of Sudama and they accepted the flower garland which Sudama offered to both of them with love. So this is how his desire was fulfilled in the next life as he came back as Sudama Mali and he was able to personally offer a garland to Krishna and Balaram in his house. Actually, they visited his house and he was able to offer a garland. So in this is how the prayer should be. And this is actually what a true guru should be teaching the disciple. A true guru should be teaching a disciple that first of all, he is not God. That is what he should be teaching the disciple. And also he should be teaching a disciple how to develop love for God. But because as I mentioned earlier in the class, as it is mentioned in the 12th canto, that is an anomaly of Kali Yuga. People actually come forth to claim themselves as God, and there are people who accept also such incarnations as God. So there are both cheaters and there are also people who want to get cheated. In fact, you know, there are many prostitutes who live around India, but they like to visit the holy dham. So we would be wondering why prostitutes like to visit Holy Dham. It's such an abominable profession they are doing. But these prostitutes visit Holy Dham. And what is the hope these prostitutes have when they are visiting Holy Dham? They are actually trying to seduce some sadhus who are living in the Holy Dham. So that they can seduce the sadhus and so that the sadhus can give them a saintly child. That is the purpose with which some of these prostitutes visit Holy Dhams. And they might be, you know, when they visit, obviously they have a lot of charm, they have a lot of experience. So they are able to seduce all those weak, there are many weak-minded sadhus in Vrindavan. So they are able to seduce these weak-minded sadhus and somehow they are able to, you know, try in the hope of getting a saintly child. They feel if they have a child with this union, that child will be saintly because he was a sadhu. Now there are many thieves and there are many bogus people who also come to know about this practice of prostitutes. So many of these bogus people and these thieves, what they do is they go to Vrindavan and they decorate themselves as a sadhu. They dress up as a sadhu and they sit under a tree. And then they sit there and they wait for some of these prostitutes to come by. And the prostitutes looking at the dress think, oh, this is a sadhu and I'll get a saintly child. So then they have a union and, you know, God only knows what type of child is going to come out of that. So we see that in Kali Yuga it is there. As it is mentioned in the 12th canto, there are cheaters. These prostitutes are cheaters because they want to continue the profession, but they want to have a saintly, so-called saintly child. And there are also people who want to cheat, like these bogus people and thieves who go and dress up as sadhus. But that is not how gurus should be. A true guru is one who is not out to cheat people. A true sadhu is not one who is out to claim that he is God. And he is not one who is out to actually take people away from the true path of God consciousness. A true guru is one actually who opens the eyes, who doesn't beat around the bush, like Srila Prabhupada, very direct and not at all mincing words when he has to make people realize or educate people about the truth of accepting incarnations. He was very good in educating people how to distinguish between a fake incarnation and a true incarnation. That is what Srila Prabhupada used to do so much through his books. So that is actually a true guru, who's not only opening people's eyes about reality, about the truth, also educating them, and also developing love or awakening the love which is there in the heart of people towards Krishna. So in this connection, there is one more pastime which happened during Lord Ram's time. Now there was one king who was by the name of Shirodhaja king. And he was ruling when Lord Ram was there on the planet. So Lord Ram had just gone to Mithila, and Ram and Lakshman both had gone, and we know the whole pastime, how he had won the hand of Sita, goddess Sita, and he broke the bow and he won the hand of goddess Sita. And then they were about to get married, and there was so much joy in the kingdom of Mithila that Lord Ram is going to marry goddess Sita. So this Shirodhaja king, he was a great devotee of Lord Ram. And when he came to know this, he was also living nearby, so when he came to know this, he called one of his tailors, and he actually told that tailor, that you please stitch a very beautiful, like use your talents to the maximum. Because this tailor was really good in stitching costumes. So he said, you use your talent to the maximum and you create a beautiful dress for Lord Ram and Lakshman both. And then I want you to, and that too it is for their wedding day, so I want you to stitch the best opulent costume that you ever must have stitched in your life. And this tailor actually did not know about Lord Ram and Lakshman. He wasn't aware of their identity, or not, neither was he a devotee. But Shirodhwaja king instructed him. So this tailor went and made, because it was the instruction of the king, he made the most opulent dresses for Lord Ram and Lord Lakshman. And then he gave, those dresses were given to Ram and Lakshman, then they were wearing that dress during the marriage, when the entire marriage ceremonies were taking place in Mithila. So he went and attended the marriage ceremony. And when this weaver saw, this tailor saw that Lord Ram and Lakshman were wearing his dress and they were looking so beautiful in that dress. So actually the dormant love which was there in this tailor's heart, it got awakened. So he was not actually, as we mentioned, he was not a devotee before. But because Shirodhwaja king was a devotee and there was love in the heart of Shirodhwaja king, that love got transferred into the heart of this tailor. And his dormant love awakened. And that is what is the duty of a guru also, to actually awaken the dormant love which is there in a devotee's heart towards the true God, not towards some bogus incarnations, but towards true Lord Ram and towards the true Lord Krishna who have come on this planet. So this way, this in the tailor's heart, love got awakened. And that time a desire arose in his heart that, oh, I really wish one day I am able to personally stitch clothes for Lord Ram and Lord Lakshman, and they come to my house and I'm able to personally put that dress on them. He wanted to personally dress the Lord, like we personally dress the deities. He got that desire somehow in his heart when he was watching the marriage ceremony going on. And obviously Lord Ram is the Paramatma in the devotee's heart. So he immediately understood that this devotee is sincerely yearning for this desire to dress us personally with his own hands. And Lord Ram actually wanted to fulfill that desire. So this same tailor then was born as the tailor in Mathura. And we know the pastime when Krishna and Balaram came to Mathura. They actually went to this tailor and this tailor stitched beautiful costumes. And with his own hands he got to dress the lords as Krishna and Balaram. So how Lord Ram is merciful, and he reciprocated with the desire of this tailor. And he actually gave them, he fulfilled their desire as Krishna and Balaram. So that is what is the duty of a true guru. To actually open the eyes to the truth. And as Srila Prabhupada mentions, to actually avoid people. Because there are so many people in Kali Yuga, they are actually innocent, but they are being misled by the propaganda of these false gurus. They are being misled, and therefore they are accepting these false ordinary gurus to be as Krishna or Ram, and they are rejecting the true Krishna and Ram to be ordinary living beings. So that is what a guru's thing is, that he reveals through his books, he reveals through his teachings, and he opens the eyes. And if following in the footsteps of Prabhupada also mentions, like Govinda Dasi did, we also all do that. If we come across people who are misled by all these things, we actually open their eyes and tell them the truth about true incarnations. So it's time up. We'll end our class here, and if there are any comments or questions or corrections. Because it's at the bottom of the universe. So Prabhupada explains over there. First of all, Garbhodaka ocean, you know, when Lord Mahavishnu expanded himself as Garbhodakshai Vishnu and he entered each and every universe. So it is mentioned that because the universe is in the shape of an egg and it was covered, Lord Vishnu, Garbhodakshai Vishnu, started perspiring. And his perspiration actually filled the bottom half of the universe. And therefore it is called as Garbhodaka ocean. So it is nothing but sweat. So we know that it's the sweat of the Lord. So everything about the Lord is transcendental. But that way sweat is considered to be abominable. And when when Prabhupada mentions about Varahadeva's pastime, how he had a fight with Hiranyaksha and how he was trying to retrieve, Hiranyaksha had plunged the earth into the Garbhodaka ocean. There Prabhupada mentions that because it is anything which is at the bottom. Now if we go at the bottom of oceans, or if we go at the bottom of ponds and rivers, it's very muddy because there is so much mud, so many things have fallen in. So that is the analogy which Prabhupada was using to describe that Garbhodaka ocean is right at the bottom of the universe. And then, you know, at the top of the Garbhodaka ocean, the hellish planet starts. So everything which is not very auspicious is below the earthly planetary systems, and right at the bottom obviously it's very inauspicious and quite abominable. So that is the explanation Prabhupada gives when Varahadeva went and retrieved, and what was the purpose, he took the form of a pig. He could have taken some other form to retrieve earth, but he took the form of a pig because pigs are very good in sniffing things out from abominable places. So that is how Prabhupada explains. What mantra he wanted to chant? Yeah, I think if he has been chanting nicely for 2 years, then it is good to inform him. But like Govindadasi was doing, or Prabhupada has advised in his books, yeah, it is very good to educate him about what is the truth. Maybe Bhagavad Gita or Science of Self-Realization is a very good book through which, Prabhupada gives lots of, there are a very nice chapter on true guru and all these things, position of Krishna. So Science of Self-Realization is a very good book for new people to become aware of the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. So that might help here. Anything else? Yes, sir. In fact, this is a question which was, even raised during Prabhupada's time. So we imbibe Prabhupada's mood, but we don't imitate Prabhupada. That is very important, and we draw the line between that, because Prabhupada used to sometimes tell his disciples also, like we know Prabhupada many times uses the word rascals in his books. And he calls the modern scientists, like he's very bold in calling them as rascals if they are misleading people by the false scientific propaganda. So Prabhupada but used to say that I'm an old man. And usually, we know even with our grandparents, many of us have grandparents. So sometimes grandparents, elderly people and children are given that concession when they speak something which might not be, completely in line with what is normal etiquette or manners. Even our grandparents sometimes say some things, but we really give, oh, they are elderly people. So Prabhupada explained that I'm an elderly man. So if I might call someone as fools and rascals, I might be given that concession because I'm elderly. But you all should not do like that. So it's important we don't imitate Prabhupada. But yes, Prabhupada's mood is very important to be passed on to people. And his mood was how to reveal the true nature of Krishna consciousness, what is Krishna, how he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and not all these, people who claim themselves to be as incarnation of God. So that mood definitely is, we should pass. But not imitating Prabhupada's style or imitating Prabhupada's words, because Prabhupada was heavy and Prabhupada was elderly. So, and Prabhupada was a pure, he was an Uttamadhikari, he was a pure devotee. So in fact, if we see also when Prabhupada was present on this planet, there were so many Western bodied people who were coming into Krishna consciousness. In fact, I was told even in this temple, there was, in the earlier days when Prabhupada used to visit, it was very hard to find Indian bodied people. It was mostly all Australians, like Western bodied people who were devotees. So that was Prabhupada's power. In fact, I was listening to a lecture of Giriraj Maharaj, and he was mentioning in that lecture, he said that because Giriraj Maharaj is a very early disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and he said that when I first started listening to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada used to talk about the body and the soul, the difference between body and soul and all that. So Prabhupada actually has a very heavy Bengali accent when he's speaking English. We have all heard Prabhupada speak. So Giriraj Maharaj said that they were all Americans, and he said it was so hard for us to follow that accent. And he said for the first 6 months, I was completely under the belief and I was convinced that what Swamiji is saying, that he is not the body, but he is the spirit soul. And only at the end of 6 months, I came to know that we are also not this body, but we are also spirit souls. Otherwise, till that time, I kept thinking, oh, it's Swamiji is talking about himself, how he is not the body, how he is the spirit soul. So he said it was so hard for us to follow that heavy Bengali accent which Prabhupada had in his English. But it was mainly Prabhupada's purity which brought about the transformation in people's hearts. So obviously we don't have that purity, at least speaking of myself, like I don't have that purity. So I can't imitate him also in that purity or in his words. But definitely we know what is Prabhupada's mood. Through his books we know what is his mood, so, and through his Vani. So we definitely try to imbibe that mood and also distribute it to others. Prabhupada was not, Prabhupada was so expert that he was not, without agitating a person's ego, he was able to get the message through. And I remember when Harisari Prabhu was here, he was giving us a lot of nectar on Srila Prabhupada, so he also used to mention this a lot. And if we know also that Prabhupada once, you know, people went and asked him about Mahatma Gandhi. Like, you know, Gandhiji was given the title of Mahatma in India. And Prabhupada, the disciples went and asked that, oh, Prabhupada, you know, he has been given the title of Mahatma and, you know, now he has to be accepted as Mahatma. Some discussion along those lines the disciples were having with Prabhupada. So Prabhupada did not confront them or agitate them or something. They said, okay, let us do one thing. Let us open the Bhagavad Gita and find out what is the definition of Mahatma. And then Prabhupada made them read what is the definition of a true Mahatma. And Prabhupada made them conclude that yes, a true Mahatma means these are the characteristics which a Mahatma should have from Bhagavad Gita, from Lord Krishna's mouth. It is mentioned like that. So then they had to draw the conclusion whether, you know, actually the title of Mahatma is suitable for a person or not suitable. So Prabhupada was very expert. He always used to refer to scriptures whenever he wanted to establish some things. Thank you, Mataji. Anything else? Okay, we'll end here. Krantraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.